sweet tea, and creativity. Time for more Jessica Burtis questions on the Midweek Drive.
You know what they call sweet tea in the South?
What's that?
Tea.
Well, who would have thought a year ago, almost the day, because we're looking at the 13th of December, when we last received notification from the awesome Gary Whitcliff, who made his debut, of course, on Midweek Drive. That was when he was actually on Mexican time, that he finished off that particular market package with, hopefully our travels will allow us to stop by and meet you in person. Otherwise, when programmed appropriate, let's move from there. Who would have thought, Gary Whitcliff, that we'd be welcoming you back and actually seeing each other face to face, which we didn't do, of course, with the Medium Radio last time. But of course, I don't think we were expecting quite the year we've actually had, were we, Gary?
No. We had, my wife and I actually left Mexico, come back to the States on our way to Portugal and then Spain, where we're going to walk the Camino this spring for a couple of months. And obviously that was curtailed, so we ended up staying in the States.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, as I say, we still sort of resonate from the fantastic work that you actually put in last year in terms of relating to ancients, new audio, ramification of alien intelligence, a whole range of things, the 21st century megatrends, which is one of the reasons why we thought we'd introduce you to one of our fine team here, of course, Jessica Burtis, who is in North Carolina. So not too, in fact, closer to you than we are over in Lincoln and Teesside.
Well, Jessica, I welcome you. I'm actually in northern Florida right now.
Okay. East Coast. Awesome.
Yeah. We'll be heading into Alabama today.
Nice. Can I ask what brings you to Florida?
My wife and I basically traveled. We've been traveling for 8.5 years, and we've been in Florida for about a month. And now we're going to actually see some family up in northern Alabama.
Oh, fantastic.
And it just goes on and on from there, basically. But we're really here to talk about, Gary, your latest book, which I was so impressed by. I immediately sort of sent an email back saying, we must feature you again, of course. And Mickey was happy to endorse that and bring you into, obviously, the Author of the Week feature. Destination North Pole, 5,000 kilometers by bicycle. I'll say that again. Destination North Pole, 5,000 kilometers by bicycle. There are those of us who would actually say, you know, even actually a couple of kilometres. And interestingly, you use European terms here as opposed to miles, etc., because, you know, you'll be driving on the other side of the road before too long.
Well, keep in mind, I spent most of the time in Canada on this trip. I left the Dakotas and headed to North Pole, Alaska, but about two-thirds of the trip was actually through Canada, and that's why it's in kilometres rather than miles.
Very good. I wasn't sure whether you were surreptitiously trying to kind of break away from imperial measurements in the States, really, but it's an honest time. But I mean, looking at the whole process of it, as you said, from the Dakotas through Canada to the Arctic Circle in central Alaska, Jessica's a journey person who kind of heads off in all sorts of things, but I think, Jessica, even you might sort of have balked at that cycle, right?
A little bit. It sounds very cold. Very, very long.
Actually, It was beautiful. I actually left on May 20th, and I plan to get there on July 20th. So I allowed 2 months, but it was the longest days of the year. So summer solstice was right in between. So it was actually, should have been fairly nice. Should have been.
Yes, it was
cold. I mean, when we stayed in the Glacier View Motel in the Yukon, there's a pretty good clue that there's glaciers around and snowflakes, okay? Doesn't matter what time of the year.
Thankfully, otherwise global warming would really be accelerating. We'd be much more worried about the whole thing. So, you know, be grateful for our sort of small mercies there. I mean, one of the other areas, of course, Gary, that we want to focus on today is how the COVID challenge that we've all been faced with has had, I would say, certain dividends. I mean, what we're doing now is a dividend because clearly back in the day, we would have had to head to studios, reliant on various other bits and pieces, hope that lines would be connected. I've had a couple of glitches today with respect to Zoom calls, but other than that, touch wood, or indeed touch tablet, things have been pretty much okay. But again, your text, learning as it influences the 21st century and culture and mysterious aging agents changing it. Both written, of course, in the middle of the last decade, 2015 through 2017. And we are clearly in the 21st century. Just share with us how you feel that actually things like this is accelerating the whole way in which we as a species are kind of developing.
Well, we're a different generation, and Jessica's coming into that generation into the 21st century. But we have to keep in mind, this is, you know, towards Christmas time that we're recording this again. And 1,900 years ago, Jesus took a donkey into Jerusalem. And 100 years later, they were still taking a donkey into Jerusalem. There were no telephones at the time. There were no rail. There was no buses, trucks, you know, certainly no airplanes. We went through the 20th century. The 20th century was a century of transportation advances. The 21st century, as we're doing in the Zoom call you said today, this is the modern communications. Rather than transporting people, we're actually transporting voices and interacting personally via electronics. That's what's changed. And that's actually, I teach that. I walk through those examples in my books relating to ancient series of books, as you just pointed out. But the real change is toddlers started swiping tablets and cell phones when they're young. It's going to be highly unlikely they're going to be satisfied being transported to a brick building for 20 years and learn in school. It's just not going to happen. It's going to transition into an electronic medium of exchange.
Hey, one of the things that we introduced you by, of course, last year when you made your debut on the program was a researcher, inventor, military intelligence veteran, economist, agriculturalist, systems developer, societal explorer, and indeed an author with interests in social structure, comparative cultures, learning, and cultural megatrends. I mean, you know, it's almost as though you're going for that polymath title solely on that basis alone in many ways of Renaissance man. But it does echo a whole range of sort of things in terms of the experience, in terms of ways that you actually sort of developed the whole sort of side of things, and indeed change, which of course is the nature of our existence.
Absolutely. You know, one example, I tried to think of an example from the UK to the US. It's actually, I'll use the biking example. It's actually closer from Plymouth, UK to Plymouth, Maine, than it is from South Dakota to North Pole, Alaska, where I biked. Okay. It took 27 years or whatever, the Concorde jet could fly less than 3 hours from London to New York. It stopped running in, I think, 2003. But why? People no longer, by 2003, no longer thought it was a great idea to jump on a plane and fly to New York or pay the price. It was much easier starting to use these kinds of communication. And if they were going to go, they would take the 6-7 hours that it normally took. And so that is a change that occurred this century.
Yeah. And of course, it does mean that we can also confirm that the carbon footprint that we leave is virtually non-existent, which is good.
Right, certainly reduced.
Jessica, we'll bring you into this particular stage. As Gary's rightly said, you are the next generation. You are our future, Jessica. As I say, I'm pinning my hopes on you to actually go as a running mate with Kamala Harris for the 2024 election,
yes.
If not later on.
Vote for me.
Questions from yourself, please.
Yeah, I have to ask, how did you get involved in this field? What kind of inspires you?
As you've noticed in my background, I grew up as a farm kid, and I went into the Air Force during the Vietnam War. I didn't want to be recruited, so I volunteered, and they sent me to Italy, they sent me to Japan, all over, and so I spent time in military intelligence, actually 7.5 years, and from there, I was exposed to many different cultures, and that's why I wrote this Relating to Ancient series, because I tied in a lot of examples over my life into these books. And as a person, I always wanted to keep mentally and physically active. And so when I turned 65, I decided if I wanted to go bicycle a long trip and I wanted to go to Alaska, I better do it. I'm 65, I better do it. And so these are kinds of things at your age that you can look out and say, I want to write, I want to broadcast, I want to do whatever. Just keep plugging away. Just don't stop.
Looking at one of the lines that you sort of commented on, I think an email or a memo that was actually sent to you from an 80-year-old individual who said, you're right about the unexpected connection between your learning and culture books and the pandemic. So talk to us, Gary, this unexpected connection between learning and culture and the pandemic. Is it just a case of, well, thank God something got rid of President Trump, or perhaps not?
It actually has nothing to do with politics. As I write in my books, Relating to Ancient Series of Books, that the transition was occurring. The pandemic only speeded. We were going to move into children, more children learning at home, like they did in the ancient. Most of learning always occurred at home for thousands of years. And we just are moving back. Pandemic forced it to move more quickly. And so teachers and administrators don't realize it yet, but the next generation that's being born now, they are going to be speeded into a generation of electronic media. And what's happened now in a year, there was a vaccine developed for a disease that didn't even occur about a year ago. Okay, these are the kinds of things that can change between society extremely quickly using technology that we would have thought in the 20 years ago would take a decade or so to develop such a vaccine.
Is the future inherently optimistic? I mean, we often talk about clearly, is the bottle half full? Is it half empty? Where are we actually going? If you actually look for negativity, you'll find more negativity, because certainly that there are certain aspects of our global situation that we live in that would suggest that actually, Jessica, you might as well pack it in now, love, because there's not going to be much future for you from that point of view. We kids of the 60s and 70s have ruined the world for you. What the hey? Gary, would you say that actually we should be focusing on the positive and actually start saying, actually, there are good things that you just said that have emerged from the challenges that we've been faced with?
There's always positives. As you mentioned, you can always focus on the negatives, but I've been an optimistic person my whole life. And if you're not optimistic, Jessica, you're going to stop doing things. That's crazy. Be optimistic. Look for things. You're going to make mistakes. I certainly have made a bunch. And I know Alex probably didn't make any, but
you don't want to go there, honestly.
here's a guy that we're hosting this show that, if I remember right, started in your degree in television and media back in the 80s. You graduated from college like 84 or something?
It was biology and chemistry. So I was a science graduate to start off
and
with.
Your master's was 2 years later?
Yes, and then I followed that through with film and television, exactly. So it switched over to that area.
Here's a gentleman that brought the industry into the 21st century, and now we're 20 years into it. And look at the changes that he's seen. The changes that you will see will be just as dramatic. That's positive. Look forward to it.
Jessica, further questions for Gary, please.
Yeah, I would say thank you, because I think a lot of us forget that change can be a very positive thing. It kind of reminds me of what C.S. Lewis said when he wrote that humans kind of need change, like the seasons, to be cyclical, because we need that to survive. So how do you decide, I'd have to ask, how do you decide what your next trip is that you're going to take? And like, how do you pick where to go next and what adventure to take?
Well, we plan on going to Mexico this month, but we decided that the risks were greater than the opportunities. And so we made some changes this winter, and we'll continue to make changes. And that's the beauty about traveling. You look for opportunities, and they're not always what you thought they were going to be.
Has there ever been a time where you had one plan and it completely changed to something different that turned out really well?
Almost all the time. When I decided, I'll use the bicycle trip. When I decided to bike to North Pole, Alaska from here, South Dakota, I asked my wife if she wanted to go with me. And she had other plans. And I go, okay, I'm back. I got back from Mexico. I packed my bags. A week later, I was bicycling. 2 weeks later, I was in Western Saskatchewan. And she caught up with me. She stayed back for Memorial Day. She had a family situation. She lost her brother and things. And so things changed, all right? And so she stayed back. And then she drove all the way, the 5,000 kilometers, by herself, and made an adventure by herself. But once she caught up with me, I took all my bags off, threw it in her vehicle, and then she went ahead and found nightly food and lodging through northern British Columbia and the Yukon and Alaska. And so that was a change that occurred, which we both benefited from. We both had an amazing adventure.
Fantastic. It's such, I don't know, I hope that I can do this throughout my life, to have these, like, that spontaneity to be able to do that. I think that too often people get a little intimidated by the travel ideas, and, you know, it holds them back from what could have been, like you said, a great thing that happened to you.
Well, Jessica, you are traveling right now because you're traveling and meeting somebody in Florida. At the same time, you're working with a gentleman in London, or Lincoln, and in effect, you're traveling in your mind. You're not physically moving. And that's the benefit of this current generation. We're moving to that travel mode much quicker than we would have had the pandemic not occurred.
And as we've said, of course, bear in mind the rate at which the Earth is rotating at several thousand miles an hour, and then we're spinning around the sun, and the sun in itself is actually spinning around the Milky Way and the solar system. It's amazing we can actually hold on, really. It's phenomenal, but we are.
Well, and right now we're using communication that was really developed in the late 19th century. And one of my concerns, and still the optimistic, is the data is there. We're able to grab materials much quicker now. But a lot of people say they're multitasking. They're using cell phone, text, emails, Zooming, whatever, all at the same time. We're losing that ability somewhat of long-term thought. It took Einstein, a very smart guy, Einstein from 1907 to 1915 to develop the gravitational theory. It took until 2016 for scientists using spacecraft and other things to actually figure out that Einstein was right 100 years earlier. But he took 7 years to think through this and 1 year to write it down. 100 years to figure out he was right. If we only multitask and use snippets, we don't use that long-term thought that is needed. And Jessica, that's what I encourage you to do. Plan long-term, but be spontaneous. Spontaneous, please.
Certainly, I can see having an endpoint in mind is useful, but you should never actually get messed up with the cursed house, basically, or the cursed houses. Mike Dooley, also based in Florida, frequently says, "Culture and the mysterious agent changing it." As you said, Gary, thinking can often be the best way to travel. I mean, we do that as a matter of course, and you're absolutely right. The kind of synchronous way in which we're dealing with different time zones. I mean, here we are in England, and we're obviously approaching. We're in evening time. You guys are obviously at late morning, and so on. And we're having synchronous communication as opposed to asynchronous communication and so on. There isn't the kind of gap that you get if one of us was on Mars, although that's been said about me for several times, so what the heck. But in terms of that whole sequence, talk us through that mysterious agent. Is this something which is kind of embedded in our cells? Is it something that evolves within our cellular structure, our DNA, within the species, within the planet? How would you actually see it?
I started this writing in 2015, and I tried, because we travel all over the world. And we just got back from Australia the year before, New Zealand, Fiji, whatever. And we were in, actually house sitting in Mexico. And I sat down and I tried to answer this question, what is changing culture? And it turned into a book. And so 20 of the 22 chapters actually started as a riddle. And one of them was, I'll give you this one. Where are we all going in the same direction, but follow a different path? And I use examples like that to try to walk through the reader into each chapter. I talk about race. I talk about communications. The thing about riddles, 20 of the 22 chapters are riddles in this culture. And a riddle, you always try to divert people's attention, because it's very easy to divert attention. And so one of my riddles, and I certainly don't mean to offend anybody, but think about this. What nurses acts like a pacifier, but it's not uncommon to publicly observe two abreast? It lets the mind go other places rather than thinking about what is actually occurring long term. And so that's how I use these riddles in culture and the mysterious agent changing it. And I have an answer, and the answer is in the book. My answer is in the book, if the reader pays attention.
We're not talking mammary glands here, are we, Gary? I mean, you know, no, I'm thinking nurses act as a pacifier. I'm thinking about some sort of, as Harlan Ellison once said, television is just like a cathode ray teat to the population.
It is one way of me attempting to explore the depth of the reader and get the reader into thinking different options.
one of the writers that we were indirectly looking at, Jessica and myself, on another program recently called Residents Rewind was James Hilton. Of course, known not only for Goodbye, Mr. Chips. I'm beginning to identify more and more with Goodbye, Mr. Chips, but there we are. But also, perhaps more appropriately, Lost Horizon, in which, of course, the underlying theme of the text and indeed the Frank Capra movie was Be Kind. Would you say that's an essential part of the human experience, Gary, if we are to begin to achieve our potential, as opposed to, as sometimes seems to be the case in our planet today, kind of battling each other over fairly petty things?
We're always battling over petty things. Culture has always battled. Societies, countries, families have always had conflict. That's not going to change. It's the ability to look beyond that and be optimistic that we're looking into a future society that's going to have all the benefits we had and hopefully more.
So less the tragic sense of life of Miguel de Unamuno and more the kind of things are going to be upbeat and positive. So it's okay, Jessica. There will be a future for you, which is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Gary, your experience in Vietnam, you mentioned that you obviously sort of went to there and you signed up. I mean, that was one of those dreadful situations which actually emerged, which sort of launched upon the globe. I mean, Britain kind of not really hugely impacted, but I mean, the fallout, I mean, I suppose you could say, yes, but look what great material it provided Hollywood for lots of shows in terms of Vietnam and PTSD and all the aspects with respect to that. We look now, of course, and Vietnam is a tourist destination, and it kind of has repackaged, relaunched, etc. If you cast your mind back to those days, and of course the fact that for America as a nation, it was probably going through a challenge in terms of, as many of the directors and the generals actually said, it was lost on television as much as anything else. Do you feel that lessons have been learned that actually people are saying, yeah, we don't want to repeat those situations?
We always learn lessons that way. Unfortunately, lessons of war are tragic within families, or tragic within people. I should clarify that I was in military intelligence and I listened to signals. I was a communications intercept operator. So I was in Vietnam era veteran, but I wasn't in Vietnam specifically. But you said, have you opened an opportunity here to say what occurred because of that war? It was terrible. But at the same time, this country and that country now exchange not only tourists, not only supplies, a lot of our clothing and things are made over there. That would have been unthinkable 50 years ago, unthinkable. And so these are the kinds of positives that can come out if people look for the positives.
Which is the underlying message, certainly, of the program and the series, and indeed working through that process. Back to your bicycle again. I noticed that this goes back to 2010. You spoke with a 70-year-old man who biked with his brothers to Alaska. And in 2011, you planned to effectively take leave from your job and make the trip. Were there folk who were around you there, Gary, who said, are you insane? What are you thinking of?
Yes, they probably did. I was in my late 50s, and I had plenty of time off and wanted to take leave without pay for some of that time. And they go, my boss's boss said, I think you better stay and work. Your job here is more important than bicycling to Alaska. So I retired the next year. And long story short, we traveled for 6 years. And I go, okay, now I'm 65. I better take advantage of this. And so it didn't occur when I thought it. When I wanted to occur, but if a person stays mentally and physically active, you look for challenges and opportunities. I'm not an athlete by any means, but I found this to be a wonderful challenge. I hadn't been on my bike in 8 months, but by the time I got into Saskatchewan, 7-8 days after I took off, my longest day, I biked 267 kilometers, 167 miles, Jessica, 166 miles, excuse me. 267 kilometers in a day. I couldn't wait to get up every morning and see what was out there.
It shows the inspiration that's certainly there and can be accessed through the gift of life. Jessica, any closing thoughts or questions from yourself?
Where is the first place that you're going to travel to after COVID?
The
the first place. Ugh, we have a whole bunch of them because we still have Spain and Portugal on our list. We still have the backpacks not quite packed to go over there because there's things that we use on that, would use on that trip that we don't need other places. So our backpacks are like ready to go. We have a place in Mexico, as I said, this month. We were heading there. And so will it allow us to go there yet this spring or this winter? Perhaps. We missed our granddaughter's wedding in Ketchikan, Alaska this year. So yeah, Ketchikan might be the next place, but we're always looking for opportunities. And today we're going to head from Florida into Alabama. So this is just one of the things we're going to do.
And of course, there's always the invitation for you to Lincoln, England. I mean, likewise, Jessica can return there and sort of work on that process. So.
I have been to London. They celebrated my 20th birthday, actually, in Hyde Park, Mildenhall, Lakenheath, several places in the UK. So, Jessica, it's a wonderful place. I encourage you to go there as soon as you have an opportunity.
Well, as I say, Jessica had the experience in Europe, short-lived though it was, because she had to get back to the United States because of the pandemic. But, you know, she's still welcome back most of the time. In fact, all the time. What the heck?
Most of the time. There you go. You're welcome back. You just necessarily can't go back.
Yeah, exactly. I'll obviously plug relating to ancients.com as one sort of route, etc. But Gary, where can people actually get hold of this awesome new book that you've actually put together, which might, if you're not in time to actually provide it as a Christmas gift, it might well be ideal for the new year or welcoming in 2021. So how can people actually get hold of Destination North Pole 5,000 kilometers by bicycle?
Worldwide, people get it by Amazon. They read it on Kindle. I would encourage them to get hard copy books because whether it's my books or others, they can pass it on. RelatingToAncients.com, they can go to that and they'll find a whole list of people around the world that actually supply that book. RelatingToAncients.com and just look under the directory tab.
And it's Gary Whitgreffe and it's WIETGREFE. In terms of the whole thing. So WIETGREFE. Gary, it's been awesome as we knew it was going to be. It was great to actually have you back on the show and actually see you in person from that point of view. So we'll put those final two questions to you, but I'll ask Jessica to put them to you because she's become a seasoned pro over the last year. And in fact, sort of really emerged in the interim period between our first discussion last December and of course this second one today. So Jessica, over to yourself.
Yes, I'd have to ask, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, absolutely. And this is the type of program that I would like to put on YouTube because a lot of people worldwide go on YouTube and that's where my cycling, 10-minute cycling journey is. Put in my last name and they'll probably eventually see this on there as well as our video clips from our trip north, bicycle trip north. So, yes.
In fact, Gary, before the second question comes across, what I'll do then is I'll try and make sure that we'll send you the video. I'll do something rare and unique for us, but I'll send you the video of this particular
video. Or you can post it.
Okay. I have enough posting with various other bits and pieces that you can use it for that point. We'll send it across to you. And in between times, obviously, those regular listeners, of course, on our podcast site, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com, I'll send you the link to that. Some people actually say the scenery is so much better on radio. I don't know. It's all a matter of concept. Jessica, the second question, of course, is?
Will you be joining us again?
I sure hope so.
Gary Whitgreffe, explorer and a general writer and cultural anthropologist and general all-round soul, and Jessica Burtis, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and happy holidays, Gary, in betwixt times.
You too, Jessica.
Thank you.
One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Well, of course, it was the wonderful Frank Capra and Lost Horizon who channels the immortal phrase, be kind, which is probably something which we still need some 80-odd years later, and indeed have always needed, arguably, from that point of view. And indeed, the whole notion of being kind and working through the process is good for mental health in general, indeed. Within the pandemic, of course, this year has been particularly interesting in terms of acts of kindness and so on and so forth. And to actually talk through some of the importance of kindness, etc., who better
than indeed the wonderful mental health and projects manager from Kind Snacks, of course. That's the wonderful Harry Corrin. How are you, Harry?
Thank you for having me. Very well, thank you.
Excellent. So, I mean, it seems so simple, those four letters, that wonderful word kind, but yet, you know, we still find it difficult to actually, you know, cope with respect to that, especially in years like this, presumably.
No, certainly. And I think it's something as a brand that we talk about a lot. But, you know, what do we mean by, you know, that phrase being kind, and how can we encourage that? And I think for me, it does fall on two areas. It's that idea of being kind to yourself. And I think this year, we've certainly had to do that. We've had to pay attention to the ways in which we need to be kind to ourselves to probably get through what has been a very difficult year. And I think also be kind to others. And that's that collective group effort to help those around us. And I think through our research, we've certainly seen that. And we have seen, although what a difficult year we've had, some amazing kind acts.
Absolutely. And we've seen, obviously, on the huge national scale, the success of Captain Sir Tom, of course, with the 100th laugh of his kind, of his garden, I should say, which generated over 500,000 kind tweets and so on. Marcus Rashford, of course, also substantial from that. And Kind Snacks have also paired up, of course, with another four-letter word, that's CALM, the campaign against living miserably, for this next sort of little project. Would you like to share with us what you're doing with CALM, please?
Yeah, I would love to. And CALM, the campaign against living miserably, is a charity that means a huge amount to us as a brand. And we've worked with them over the past couple of years, but over the lockdown period, we knew that they have seen an increase in the usage of their helpline. And we knew that their work was important now more than it ever has been before. So we have partnered with CALM to showcase the power in which kindness has on individual and collective mental health. But also, next year, we'll be working with our retailer partners, WH Smith and Tesco, to raise money for CALM to allow their helpline services to continue to do the amazing work that they do.
And indeed, as if by magic, you say the word CALM, the campaign against living miserably, and indeed the chief executive officer of CALM actually comes and joins us now. How are you, Simon?
And so I appear. You merely mention
exactly.
My name.
Exactly.
That's just how it works.
It's profound. It's just magic. Simon, welcome. We've just been sharing with Harry, obviously, the importance of obviously being kind in general. But I mean, talk us through, obviously, your own work as CEO for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. And have you seen, obviously, more challenges in this awesome year of the plague?
We've certainly seen more challenges. So our helpline, demand on our helpline increased at the start of lockdown by just around 40%, and it's grown on certain moments, like, for example, when lockdown was extended. Then again, when lockdown was relaxed, we've seen a consistent growth in the use of that helpline. But the flip to that is we've also seen an incredible groundswell of support for CALM, for people that appreciated that we needed them more than ever in order to meet that demand from our helpline, but also to enable us to campaign harder than we have before for personal change, for societal change, to help people who are confronting issues in their own lives or who want to help people, other people with their lives too. So I think that's reflected in the work we've done with Kind Snacks on the kindness curve, and we've seen generosity and kindness towards others have grown at the same time as we've seen people needing that kindness as measured through the use of our services.
Absolutely. And Harry, returning to yourself, of course, the important thing is that there's a big campaign literally at present underway, which it kicks off in January with WH Smith's, Tesco, and a variety of other things as well. So share with us a few minutes about that as well.
Yeah, I would love to. And yeah, so a big part of our project with CALM is to raise money for their helpline services. We know that that is an extremely important arm of what CALM do. So we are working with WH Smith and Tesco in the new year. WH Smith will actually matching the donation, which is incredible. So a huge thank you to them. And I know it's a shared passion of theirs too. So 5p from every pack sold of CALM product will be going straight to CALM's helpline services. So it's a fantastic way for us to join together with our retailer partners to help a charity that together means a huge amount to all of us.
Which is excellent news, of course, and really sort of hugely beneficial. I mean, Simon, from your own point of view, this can only obviously not only raise awareness, but again, it's being kind in action.
Yeah, and we operate under the kind of the instruction of show don't tell, so that there's plenty of preachiness around in certainly in the mental health world, Calm comes at the issue in a different way, where we are unashamedly a suicide prevention organisation. That can sound really sad. It can sound like a really grim thing. But we believe fully that you prevent suicide by promoting life, by you avoid people living miserably by allowing them to live happily. And there's a big difference between being miserable, which is fine, because I can tell you I've been pretty miserable in 2020 on occasion, but there's a big, big difference to living miserably, which is a long-term grinding existence. And I think that as we've seen these huge numbers of people come together to support us, including our brilliant brand partners like Kind, unquestionably, there is an understanding that we need to come together more as society. We need to try to reinstate the tribal behaviours that made us so successful as a species. We see that all the way through 2020, which is a really fascinating contrast to the environment in which we find ourselves, and I think vindication of so many people that our behaviours don't sink into the low behaviours. We go to the higher behaviours, sort of when we're maybe reflecting a little bit the U.S. presidential elections. You know that if you go high, if you aim to be good, if you aim to be the person for other people, then good things happen to you and good things happen to people around you.
Or as I frequently like to say, citing one of our regular correspondents, Mike Dooley, thoughts become things, choose the good ones. Very important.
Nicely said.
It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good selves this morning, gentlemen, and indeed on the programme. So two final questions, basically, Harry Corrin and Simon Gunning. Has it been a kind interview for yourself? Have you found it a reasonable interview with us on Zoom?
I'm on the edge of tears.
Oh, marvellous. You see, it gets it all the time. Critical factor then. Hopefully you both return and we'll be continuing to be kind in 2021.
Great stuff. Thanks very much.
Harry Corrin, Mental Health and Projects Manager at Kind Snacks, and Simon Gunning, Chief Executive Officer of Campaign Against Living Miserably. Actually, before you go, gentlemen, very quickly, how can people actually get online with both fine organisations? Is it simply a case of just typing in CALM, Simon, to the search engine, and I'll take you to the website?
I think if you type CALM, you might get through to the meditation app, which isn't us. So I'd suggest searching for Campaign Against Living Miserably. Our URL is thecalmzone.net. There are endless resources there if you're worried about yourself, if you're worried about someone around you, ways to start conversations, ways to seek other types of help. Our helpline is open from 5 till midnight, 7 days a week, 0800 58 58 58. It is there for anybody and everybody that needs it. It is confidential. It is non-judgmental. It is staffed by trained professional people. So please do use it.
And presumably, Harry, likewise, if you're not visiting Smith's, Tesco's, or various other things, Kind Snacks is also online as well.
Yes, of course. Yep. www.kindsnacks.co.uk /exercise-kindness. But again, we would also encourage everyone to check out the Calm Zone website. We will have our own launch on the Calm page early next week. So. But again, echoing the importance of the helpline from our side.
Okay, well, life continues in its own merry way. And indeed, as we continue with the Midweek Drive, we've got a whole range of other aspects within the sequence. And in particular, the importance of TK Maxx. Why TK Maxx? Why is this actually sort of working through the process? Well, we're going to find out now from behavioral scientist Mike Hughes, who's going to share with us how we can transform the way in which we gift our loved ones. Mike, what is this simplicity seeker and the curious spirit and the big achiever and social connector and so on?
Good morning, Alex. Yes, so in our research, we looked at the psychology around human needs. So based on the unique year that we had with work with TK Maxx to understand what people really need this Christmas, but most importantly, what makes them feel special. So from this research, we've developed this study, which has four new gifting personality types. So as you mentioned, they are the curious spirit. So these people love their passions and interests, and they probably missed exploring new sights and sounds this year. We've got the social connector. They're happiest when surrounded by their loved ones. The big achiever, these are go-getters in our lives, always setting themselves new challenges. So they'll be looking to kickstart a new challenge next year. And then the simplicity seeker. So this person loves the home comforts and the simple things in life, and they actually probably need very little. So hopefully, as I was going through them, Alex, some are starting to ring true.
So what's the best way in which people can actually get involved with this whole campaign then?
Yeah, so we've developed this study and we've created, first of all, these four different need types and then some gift prompts. So when people have identified which need type they think their loved ones might fall into, then they can see the gift prompts. And this has been a study really to aid people. So as they're in store, so if they first of all head to TK Maxx Instagram page at TK Maxx UK, and then as they're shopping, as they're in store, as they're in TK Maxx browsing the different departments, then they use this this study to prompt new gift ideas and make sure that their loved ones get exactly what they need this Christmas.
Sounds absolutely perfect. What's the best way to actually keep up with this online, please?
Yeah, so if you go to TK Maxx Instagram page, that's at TK Maxx UK, then you'll find all the information, all the need types and questions there.
Mike Hughes from TK Maxx, huge thanks and happy holidays, Mike.
Merry Christmas to you too. Thank you, Alex.
Well, once again, it's time to actually welcome to the programme a tremendous soul. Of course, you may recall him from the awesome series Love Island, but of course, more than that, he is a genuine superhero. It's Dr. Alex George. How are you, Alex?
Hi, nice to speak to you again. That's a very, very kind introduction. I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of people doing their bit in this time, and you guys, of course, keeping people's spirits up over the radio as well. So thank you to you.
Well, we certainly do our best. Now, talk us through some of the sort of aspects that we've got within this whole notion of mental health issues, because clearly it is something where stress can obviously add to all our woes and fears and concerns from that point of view. And in particular, this research that suggests that British people aren't seeking help for mental health issues, despite all the media coverage about it, because actually we don't think our problems are serious enough. So is that a challenge? Do we think, oh, well, okay, fine, I might need roof repairs done. I've got challenges with respect to work. I might be sort of facing redundant, all sorts of things actually there. But ultimately, somebody else is worse off. Is that kind of one of the reasons that we're possibly concerned about this?
Yeah, well, I think what you said, I think this year there's been so much kind of focus around mental health because of what the pandemic has done. It's taken away kind of the things that we hold dear in our lives in terms of like routines and socializing and, you know, going to the gym and all the things that we kind of know as normal has been changed, you know, even our work routines as well. And I think that's brought a huge amount of focus on mental health. But you're right, you know, as the research that's done by Nuffield Health found that, you know, around a third or just over a third of people felt that they're, you know, mental health struggles weren't worth or weren't bad enough to go and seek help. And I think there's multiple factors around that. I think the stigma, you know, I hate to say it, but that is certainly still something that's present. I think people aren't as comfortable to talk about the way they feel in terms of mental health as maybe a physical health problem. And yes, I wonder as well whether people think, oh, you know, this is just part of life. It's, you know, I'm just a bit stressed. I don't need to maybe seek help. And another part, I think, as well as we kind of need to kind of demedicalize some of it. You know, I think people sometimes making it so medical, making mental health seem as a very medical thing, sometimes puts up barriers, I think, for people just actually normalizing it and speaking out about it a bit more. And I think, you know, if you look again at another part of the research there, was that a lot of the factors that I would say are important contributors to how you feel, a lot of people don't realize how important they are when it comes to mental health, your diet, your sleep, your exercise. You know, key areas that definitely impact the way you feel. I mean, other things like for myself, in a holistic sense, the things that help me is going outside for a walk. I make sure I get outside, fresh air, sunlight every day. You know, even if it rains, actually, I chuck a coat out and I get outside for 20 minutes, half an hour, walk, because I know for me that really helps with my mental health. So it's sharing in these things, talking about it, can give other people hints and tips. On Instagram, I talked a lot about actually getting outside and walking, and I joke about kicking leaves and all this kind of stuff. And people have messaged me saying, you know what, I've started doing that. I walk every day now, like you saying, it's really helping. So talking about these things helps.
I think in many ways, Alex, you've solved the whole sort of system there. The report, of course, is More Than Words, of the importance of language to normalise everyday mental health and enable access to support in uncertain times. A somewhat wordy report, but you'd expect nothing else from Nuffield Health. If people actually want to find out more details about this, which is obviously calling about employers, schools, and of course, those of us in the media, to actually sort of raise this issue and actually help in the demedicalisation of everyday mental health, where would you suggest they go?
So you can actually access we've developed this questionnaire, which you can access on the Nuffield website. So it's Nuffield, www.nuffield.com/mental-fitness. So it's around a 5-minute emotional wellbeing questionnaire, which I've done myself. And it's really, really helpful because it basically allows you to look in upon yourself and see, you know, what areas you could maybe work on, what areas that could be changed, and then gives you some resources and advice to do so. So I'd urge anyone listening, go and give it a go. It's 5 minutes. You might well find a benefit.
Look for answers from within, basically, always a good line from that point of view. Alex, you've already shared some of the sort of ways in which you've kept yourself going over the system. I mean, obviously, that can be varied for various other sort of folk, et cetera. You've clearly been in a very stressful time yourself from that point of view. Do you think there's light at the end of the tunnel? Do you think it's important we actually focus on a better 2021?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's really, you know, one of the things I talk about a lot is positivity and finding that kind of hope in everything. And I feel like this vaccine is a big element of hope for us. And, you know, it really is the exit strategy out of this. You know, we need a vaccine to get out of this and go back to normal. And the speed at which this can be rolled out, or seems to be rolled out so far, is really, really, you know, significant. We could well, hopefully, by kind of, you know, spring or even early summer, be very much nearing some normality, or normality completely. So, you know, there's real hope. And I think people, you know, you go through the winter, do all the good things right, keep routine, exercise plenty, sleep, speak to people, communicate, look after yourselves, and just keep that hope that, you know, we will have a better day.
Excellent. Well, we'll complete with those usual two traditional questions, without which, of course, it would obviously not be our usual catchphrase. So, Alex, George, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Then the next critical question, I think we've already dealt with this as well, but will you be kind enough to return in 2021? Will you come back?
Of course I will. Of course I will.
Oh, stress, happiness, all sorts of things connected together. The average British person has over 40 apps on their phone and 85% go unused. And a messy phone with multiple apps is apparently inducing stress for half of the under 44s. Clearly something needs to be done. Who do we call in at this particular stage? Well, clearly the superheroes of tech. First of all, the awesomely talented Otis Dealey. How are you, Otis?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
And the equally talented Senior Vice President and UK General Manager at WW, of course, that's Anna Hill. How are you, Anna?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Anna, we'll come to you first, because clearly a few years ago, having an app for that was almost a catchphrase that we used as a matter of course, but it seems as though all of those unused apps just cause us more frustration.
Well, that's right. We've commissioned some research and we found that on average, people have over 40 apps on their phone, which, you know, Otis and I have been talking, and actually we're probably worse than that. Otis, as you would imagine, has nearly 200. I'm a little lower than him, but we've all got too many apps on our phone and it's causing us stress and anxiety. It's a waste of money. It's causing disorganization. And you can see why it happens, because, you know, in this year of all years, we've probably spent more time on our phones than ever. And as and when you need things, you download an app and it's kind of got a bit chaotic. And it's been really interesting for us, because what we are, we've got an incredible app and we're trying to make sure that we've got it and it has got a place in people's hearts. So does it really do a number of things? Is it going to help people change their lifestyles? And so we're really proud that it does. But it was great for us to see the research and see it's needed. We need apps that actually, you know, do multiple things, so that you don't need as many apps, that are good value for money, and that are what people are looking for. Because the other stat we saw is that majority of people do now have one health and wellness app on their phone, which is a good sign, because everyone is taking their health important, you know, making it important. And we also know that a lot of people have put weight on during lockdown, and therefore turning to companies like us where we can help you is really important. So, you know, this year we've all got to take note and look after ourselves. So apps like the WW app are really important. Maybe get rid of some of those apps that you just put on for the moment that you don't need anymore.
Otis, it's an old line in Buddhism that where there is choice, there is misery. Is this applying to the app world from your old point of view?
I hadn't heard that before. Yeah, absolutely. Or especially in some cases, my case in particular, sometimes you just would like someone or something to make the choice for you, especially when you are spoilt for choice. Anna alluded to it earlier without putting me in it too much. I do have far too many apps on my phone, you know, even for someone who is who works regularly in and around technology. As an example, I have five music streaming apps, but I only ever have one subscription running at any given time. I do jump between them. But of course, if I'm not using a particular app, why is it taking up space on my phone? This makes no sense. And so, you know, you could get bogged down in asking the whys. Why do I have so many apps?
Because they're there.
This is what my mother used to say about food in the fridge. She said, I would eat just because it's there. The most dangerous time for our fridge was immediately after the weekly grocery shop. I'd hang around and I'd eat and munch and graze just because the food was there. So you are right. Yeah, it's just because it's there.
Yes, I'd be very worried to actually say there's an app for that, because that would actually take us all the way back and say, oh, no.
We've come full circle.
Exactly. So why then, Otis, from your own point of view, is it important to actually have a decluttered phone? I mean, I can see, together with Anna, we could actually be writing Zen and the Art of Appiness here from that point of view.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, look, I am probably among the least organized people on the planet. It's a good job that you can't see the floor of my office. But there's no doubt that when everything is organized and is in a place and has its place in life, and not just on your smart device, things are easier to find. You get stuff done a lot quicker. You know, when you've made a smart choice at the very beginning, then you don't have to keep making small choices in order to keep going. You know, there's one app for this, there's one app for that, and it just streamlines everything.
Well, again, Otis, with respect to the floor, I'd have to say, as I say to my students, second law of thermodynamics, the more effort you put into something, the more chaos you cause. So, but let's turn back to Anna in this particular instance. Anna, share with us why the MyWW Plus app is different from the rest in terms of actually providing a solution to this modern frustration of unhappiness.
Yeah, well, I think you need to find the app that's going to work for you, and those apps that are personalized, that use AI, that get to know you and therefore know what your preferences are, you know, what the food you like to eat, because then it will provide you with content that's really relevant. And that's what happens in the WW app, is that recipes based on the food you like are pushed to you, content based on how much exercise you like doing, so that you don't have to search through it, first of all. But more importantly than that, the app itself does, we call it five apps in one, because it does five things that you would have to find five apps to do if you didn't have the WW app. So it tracks your food. We work on a point system. It tracks your sleep, your water, your fitness. It helps you keep control of your activity and your mindset and your food, which is really important. Secondly, it has lots and lots of recipes in there. So when you are looking for food solutions for a family that are healthy and nutritious, thousands and thousands of recipes in there, and great tools to help you plan meals by, you can put in what's in your fridge and it will come up with recipes based on what you've got in your fridge. So it's really intuitive. It's really, really clever. There's a community. The third thing is there's a community in there, and it's a friendly community because everybody is on a journey and everyone's supportive of each other. Whereas when you go to other social platforms, it can be quite a dangerous world out there. So it's really nice that you're in a space where everyone is encouraging of you. There's rewards in there. So the more that you track, the better you do on your progress, you can win great rewards. And then fifthly, for me, you know, the other element where you might get a separate app is it's got loads of content, loads of fitness content. So 5-minute meditation, 15-minute exercise, podcasts, just a lot of content. So you don't need to have five different apps that push all this content. It's one app does it all. And we've invested a lot of time and effort to get it right.
That sounds absolutely amazing. Again, it's worthwhile noting, as I think we've alluded to, WW Plus app. It's Weight Watchers reimagined, nothing to do with World Wildlife or indeed wrestling.
No,
just to
do
to actually address,
Alex,
those kind of things, because you could actually download all sorts of systems there by mistake. Otis, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. Finally, would you like to share with us, Otis, where would people go to find WW Plus app? Where's the best
route
to go?
It's so simple. It's www.com. It couldn't be easier. That's where you'll find all information related to what we've been talking about and where you can get the app.
Otis Steele, our TV presenter, the Gadget Show extraordinaire. That's our TV presenter extraordinaire, because he is the best. We know that. And Anna Hill, SVP and UK General Manager of WW, also the best. Many thanks indeed. And happy days, people.
Oh, thanks, Alex. Very good.
Cheers.
Happy Christmas. Thank you.